Hello, I'm Eric Walenza, founder of IoT1, and this is the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Every episode, I interview one expert about a project that is impacting businesses today. Visit us at IoT1.com to learn more, or email me to start a discussion. Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm joined today by Kapil Kane. Kapil is Director of Innovation at Intel China, and specifically Kapil runs Ideas to Reality program, which is an internal innovation platform for Intel's 7,000 plus employees in China. We're going to start with a quick look at what is Intel doing in the industrial IoT space, especially in regards to AI, to vision processing. Then we're going to dig more into the specific challenge of innovating in China. And the challenge is different than I think most multinationals imagine. You know, especially foreign executives continue to look at China as a country that is a workshop of the world, but not necessarily a design center. And the question remains: Can China innovate? I think the answer has been resoundingly answered: yes, China can innovate. The challenge now is more: do Chinese most innovative engineers, do they want to work for a multinational? How can you actually tap into the incredible talent pool here? And so Kapil is going to talk about some of the challenges that Intel's faced here, and then how are they resolving those. Kapil, to kick off though, give us a frame for the type of work that your teams are doing, and maybe specifically in the AI, the IoT space.
Yeah, you know, so for the innovation program that we run, we have a few verticals, a few focus areas that we, you know, fund. One of them is definitely IoT. We look at consumer robots, we look at drones, we look at vision processing. AI is at the center of everything we do. We are also looking into data center solutions, VR, and the healthcare. So that's our, the broad kind of, fields we innovate in. Particularly, to give you an example of, IoT kind of applications are more industrial IoT. We are actually right now working with another multinational in China, where we both, found early stage innovations to actually partner on. And this project is to use drones that fly autonomously to do visual inspection of solar farms and identify the defects in real time and alert the maintenance technician, about what kind of defects they are, and so that they can better schedule their maintenance trips, because most of the solar farms are in the middle of nowhere. And if you are making a track there, you better, fix everything in one go, rather than going again and again. And most of the times these defects are bird droppings. It could be a burnt solar cell. It could be some leaves, on top, which is not letting the sunlight go. And if you let those defects stay there for long, it will eventually, cause a failure of that panel. And then it's a big, you'll spend more to replace a panel. So I think it's a pretty cool application of vision processing AI on the edge to be used in an industrial application, right? The other things we are doing, is creating a robot that can self-navigate, like a service robot. How can you give the eyes and ears and the brain to a robot so that he can go from point A to point B without causing any accidents? So that's another, example of the kind of stuff we do.
Yeah. I think most people, when they think of Intel, they think chips, right? It sounds like you're really branching out, more looking at specific applications and working with partners to do that. Is this a global kind of strategic shift for Intel? Is this something you've already been doing for years, but I just haven't been aware?
No, I think a couple of years ago, we changed our complete strategy to something which is geared towards Internet of Things. We call it the virtuous cycle of growth, where we have all these devices that connects to the internet, connects through the internet to the data center. So data center is where a lot of analysis happens, and then the connectivity between all these devices and the data center. So these are the three key elements that, you know, we play in. So what happens is all these, our phones, our sensors, they generate data, right? And the data goes to the data center. Data center analyzes it, creates insights that creates new kinds of use cases that, you know, creates new kinds of devices. And this keeps going on. And we call it the virtuous cycle of growth. And it's all about processing data, moving data up and down. And if you look at our recent, you know, like talks by our CEOs, he almost calls Intel a data company. Mm. He calls Intel a company that that manipulates data, moves data, and generates insights. So we are like, you know, we are like, you know, changed from being a chip company to the one that's a data company. And so anything that that has to do with data, that's where we play in.
Yeah, very cool. And you mentioned, you know, the cloud or getting back to the data center. But in this drone example, for example, are you taking that data back to the data center to analyze, or is this an edge tier?
Yeah, so, you know, usually, you know, if you you think of any AI application, right, machine learning, what you need to do is you need to collect a huge data set, bring it to the data center and train the algorithm, right? So once you've trained the algorithm, you can move that algorithm or key pieces of algorithm onto the edge, and then it can identify the defects, right? But first you need to train them. So if you want to train an algorithm to look at, let's say a bird dropping, you need to feed a lot of pictures of bird dropping into the data center or a server so that it knows next time it sees that, it knows it's a bird dropping, right? So you need data center, you need very high powered computing to train the algorithm, but to use the algorithm, it can be used on the drone, you know, on the edge.
Gotcha, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
You mentioned another project that you're working on, which is developing this set of AIs, APIs that companies can plug in specifically for visual inspection. So this sounds like somewhat of a plug and play toolkit that you're providing. Give a little bit more meat into this.
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's a pretty interesting company, you know, called Seven Senses Lab, which we, you know, which was one of the finalists at one of the startup competitions that Intel held last year. It's a different program. It's not from my program. This is more like a external facing program where we help startups, you know, in the China ecosystem. And what this company does is it makes a robot as a companion to a kid, like between I think 7 to 12 years old, yeah, or 3 to 12 years old. And what it does is it keeps track of what the child learns on a day-to-day basis. You know, for example, it first teaches a kid that, you know, hey, that's a cat, and it will keep telling the kid about the cat until the kid learns to recognize that it's a cat. Then it might tell him this is a glass, and, you know, it's like a companion who shows the world to the kid. But now if this company were to create an algorithm, you know, to recognize a cat, then to recognize a glass, to recognize different things, it's going to take them a long time, because he has to feed many, you know, images of the cat. They need to have the capabilities for deep learning, you know, because like this kind of algorithms, they are like, you know, a convolutional neural network kind of deep learning algorithms. And not everyone who wants to create a cool product knows all these things. So what we thought was that, what if a company like Intel, who understands all these things, creates a bunch of, like a library of objects and things, then people can simply, you know, call those APIs and say, you know, hey, I want to program my robot to learn all the household things. And they don't have to worry about, you know, programming for those each different object that they want their robot or anything to recognize. So they just use our library.
Gotcha. And where are we in terms of launch? Is this something that people can already use? Is it something that's in the pipeline?
No, it's in the pipeline. We are working with the Seven Senses Lab as, you know, like a early stage, you know, like a proof of concept, and, you know, how to fine tune the what we're doing, what would be useful for them. And that would be an example of, you know, the kind of product we can build that would help many other startups in the industry, right? Let's say even if it's a, it's an industrial IoT, if you want to, let's say on a production line, right? If you want to identify a certain kind of object, you know, that shows up and you want to take an action, you could kind of use this analogy. You don't have to, not everyone has to reinvent the wheel, right? So that's the thought here.
Yeah, I love this concept of taking the application design to an extent down to the citizen level, where any domain expert, any engineer, somebody who is controlling a process, can to an extent use a toolkit to develop solutions to solve their problem without having a data science background, access to a server that can crunch vast amounts of data. This has come up in a lot of the podcasts that we've done, that you have companies that have very strong expertise on the data science side. You have companies that have very strong vertical expertise, and they're generally not the same company. There's very few companies that actually, maybe General Electric might be an example of a company that actually has both, but very few of those. So I think this solution, as these solutions come to market, it's going to open up the playing field for a lot of vertically oriented companies to start creating more innovative solutions. Whereas today, they can identify the solution. Very difficult for them to actually act on it. So one of the topic that we really wanted to cover today was this innovating in China. So how do you bring innovative solutions to market in China through from ideation to market, and then of course from China to the world, because China's one of the most competitive markets in the world. If a solution succeeds here, very likely that it will succeed in Southeast Asia and then move over into the developed economies. You'd mentioned when we were talking beforehand some of the challenges. So give me a quick overview of what is the environment look like right now for engineering talent in China?
The way, we came up with this, idea of creating an innovation platform for in China, right? It was interesting data, that we looked at. And what we saw was, let's say a decade ago, millions, I think, not a decade ago, in a time from 1980s until 1995, beginning of 80s to 95, in that, 15, 20 years time frame, I think about 1 million Chinese students went abroad to study, and only 25% of them returned to China. And if you look at last 5-6 years, 2 million students went abroad and 75% of them came back. So what was once a brain drain for China is now a big brain gain. So, smart people are going abroad, getting trained and coming back to China, right? So that's one thing. The second is some of the best engineering schools are right here in China. And, if you look at the latest US News rankings, which is, considered as Bible for rankings of schools, when you apply to schools, that's where you go. And you can go do a search for the best global engineering schools. 4 out of top 10 are right in China. And the world's number one engineering school right now is Tsinghua University. And, MIT ranks 2. Then comes, Berkeley. And number 4 is Zhejiang University. And we have Harbin Institute of Technology, Shanghai Jiao Tong University, all in the top 10. So you have great talent going abroad, learning, coming back to China. You also have a great, bright students right here in China coming out of schools. And what was shocking for us to find was that these people, they don't want to work for a multinational company. 10-15 years ago, one in two graduating students wanted to work for an MNC. But today, that percentage is 20 or less than 25%. Graduates now really want to work for an MNC, and we dig a little deep into why that's so. Is because it's not for money, because multinational can always pay them more. It's not for the money. They feel working for a Chinese company, Tencent, Alibaba, Baidu, or even startups, they feel a sense of fulfillment. They feel they can actually do something that can make an impact. And they think of multinational in China as being someone who just, you know, carries out, executes based on something that has been coming from the HQ, right? That's the kind of, you know, environment we saw. And we thought that, you know, we have some amazing talent here. How can we use that to make, you know, like, you know, Intel one of, like, you know, the most preferred, like, you know, companies for all this great talent, you know, coming out of China or coming to China, coming back to China. So we thought, you know, we looked at, you know, how companies innovate, let's say, in the US. You know, when you think of innovation, you think of Apple, you think of Google. Mm-hmm. And Google had this pretty cool program, you know, where they allowed 25% of time to employees to do whatever they thought was the right thing to do. And, you know, at one point, I think when Marissa Mayer was still at Google, in that half a year, I think, you know, more than 50% of Google's products came from this 25% of the time that employees spent on doing things they thought was were the right things to do. So we took cue from that and we built a platform where we allowed our employees, we gave them the time to work on things they thought were cool, they thought, you know, mattered. And the way that we did this, you know, was create an innovation platform that allows them to ideate, which, you know, it's an online platform where they can, no matter who you are, you know, whether you are an engineer, scientist, like, you know, a salesperson, you can get your ideas heard, right? And then, you know, that's one thing, you know, it's a place for people to get the ideas heard. Second thing we did was we created incubators across, you know, we have, like, Intel has like some 20 odd sites across China, but there are like 6 or 7 main sites with, like, you know, sizable number of people. And each of those sites, we created an incubator. So this is like a committee, like an innovation committee that regularly looks at these ideas. The ones which we believe have potential, we bring them into this incubator. We give them seed funding. We give them, like, mentorship tools, resources to turn those ideas into, like, something tangible, pieces of technology or prototype or proof of concept of, you know, their idea. And what this does is it keeps people engaged. It helps people feel they're doing something purposeful, not just, you know, doing their day job. They're also doing something cool which they believe is important. And what it does is it gives us a huge pool of cutting edge technologies that we bring to the next level, and which is what we call a business accelerator. Mm-hmm. What we do here is that it's just like running an accelerator internally, like, you know, like a Y Combinator or China accelerator. But this is like an internal accelerator. We run 2 batches a year, 4 weeks each. This actually, the guys who come up with this proof of concepts, right, who turn their ideas into proof of concepts, they will create a nice business pitch. And we help them create the business pitch. We hold a boot camp before, you know, this selection day to help them on the business side. You know, how do you turn this technology into a viable business case, right? And how do you actually go and sell your idea? Because a lot of these guys who come up with these ideas are engineers. You know, they don't have, they're not like really entrepreneur kind of, you know, people. Some of them don't have business background. So what we want, we want to turn those innovators into entrepreneurs. You know, so this, the term entrepreneur is anyone who uses, you know, entrepreneurship skills within a large organization. We are creating, you know, like the next crop of entrepreneurs, like, within Intel through this process. And the end goal of this accelerator is to take those technologies and turn them into businesses that we can feed into our pipeline of products, you know, that are coming out.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, so I think great call to action for multinationals that Succeeding in China now does not, it's not enough to bring the products that you've been selling in Europe or America 5-10 years ago and bring those in. That's not going to compete in the markets of the future here. You need to design products that are made for the Chinese markets. You need to do that locally, and you need to have the right talent to do that. So I love the fact that you're really focusing on this strategically and putting some real effort behind it. I was talking with a German company yesterday, and they mentioned that their executive team never comes to China, but their executive team does dictate the strategy for China. And I think that's a big challenge that multinationals, they continue to use this this old paradigm where the global headquarters dictates strategy for China, but does not come to China, does not truly understand the markets here. That did work when you had a very clear technology advantage. A lot of companies, the technology advantage is, the gap is reducing, and you just need to be a lot closer to the market. You need to empower your local teams who truly understand the market and understand the trends. You empower them to develop the next generation of solutions. And I think more and more you're going to see those solutions start to move back into your home markets and help to drive innovation there. Quick point on that. I want to dig into these three different tiers that you're implementing. But quick point before we move on. Product development shifting from China and then going back into the home markets, back into the US, Europe. How much are you seeing that at Intel right now? Are you seeing some of these solutions that you're developing in the teams here moving back? And are they moving to the US or are they going to Southeast Asia? What tends to be the
trend? So the way Intel works, right? All the we have many business units, right? There's let's say new technologies group, okay, which is about robots, drones, and their general manager sits in the U.S. We have a client computing group that's about laptops and smart home devices. Again, they sit in the U.S. So most of the business unit heads, they sit in the U.S. Okay. And locally, they have like a China GM, maybe. So in order to put anything on the roadmap of a business unit, you need to run it through the process, which needs approval from their GM. So in fact, what we are doing is, whatever stuff we make here, we need to convince the BU to bring it onto the roadmap. And we have a pretty good process to do that. Another thing you mentioned, is that there's HQ in China, the executives don't come to China. When they look at the strategy, they may not consider China. We are doing it differently. Actually, we have a China corporate strategy office, which actually I belong to the China corporate strategy office. I report to the guy who actually sets the strategy for China, right? And this innovation was one of the strategy, right, that we came up with. So this is run out of China president's office, this whole innovation program. And it is through the recommendation of the China Strategy Office. We also every quarter we will go to the CEO and his staff, and we have a China advisory board to inform them how things need to be done in China, what we are seeing in China, how do we affect roadmaps to suit the Chinese market. So I think we are doing a pretty good job in that respect to have China heard back in the headquarters. And now people actually are coming to us to get insights. Like this morning, I was on a call with our innovation team in the US who wanted to know about how China is using digital security and surveillance technologies. The amount of cameras out here, I think China is leading the market in terms of this digital security and surveillance, and I think so the US wants to find out from us what is the state of the art here, right? So I think they are now, people are at least at Intel, they want to, when they create something new, they want to know how it affects China, or how will it be seen in the China market. So they are considering China now as whatever strategies they are making, which is a good thing, because it's I think huge market. I think 20% of our sales comes from China. You cannot ignore China market.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's go a bit deeper into each of these tiers. I think for a lot of companies, very few companies have the resources that Intel has. So I think rolling out a very ambitious program across multiple sites is going to be something that only some companies can do. But I think even this first step of the online ideation platform, so that employees can start to bring their ideas, float their ideas to the top, vet them, that's even an excellent first step. So maybe let's start there, and then we can go a bit deeper. But
Okay. Well,
what does the ideation platform look like? How do how do ideas get onto the platform? How do they? You generate 10,000 ideas. How do you prioritize and vet those?
Yeah. So there is a really cool tool called Spigot. So Spigot is a you can get a license to them. It's an online ideation tool. That's what they do for a living. So we have Spigot license. But we are not using all the features of Spigot, okay? So the Spigot was designed to collect a bunch of ideas, okay? Let's say you have a distributed company, people submit ideas, other people can vote, people can ask questions, you can compare two ideas, go head to head, and then through their algorithm, they can bubble up the best ideas. And then you can focus on those ideas and take it forward, right? What we are using Spigot for is as a repository, and as a way to know which are the latest ideas. What we have also done is when someone submits an idea, we can know which site he is from, okay? And each site, what we have done is we call it Ideas to Reality Committee. So there is a chair, and he has a team of guys who has technical background, business background, who reviews all the new ideas every fortnight. Okay, and then if this idea is good, then they will say, hey, we like your idea. And when people submit the ideas, they also mention what are the resources they are looking for, and if it's reasonable. If someone says I need $1 million, 10 people, we'll just and if someone says I need to hire an intern, and this is what I need him for 6 months, and this is what he'll do, and this is what I'm going to. Sure, at the end, we're like, okay, this sounds reasonable. It also in our strategic area. So we will say, okay, we are going to fund you, and we get him going, right? And we do this at many sites. But you can, even if you're one site, I think what you definitely need is a way to collect ideas, be it visible for other people, so that it's not exclusive, We want to make it inclusive. People feel like they are part of it. And other thing is, you need to take quick actions, You cannot, someone submit an idea and it remains there and you never hear from you. So you need to have that thing going. You need to have people who regularly look at ideas, regularly give feedback. Many times we'll bring in the innovator and ask him a few questions because not everyone is really good at expressing their ideas, in words, Yeah.
Absolutely. And when we're talking about ideas here, are we specifically talking about engineers who are introducing new product development, technology development, or one concept I think is interesting to me, at least in the IoT space, is this concept of an IoT Kaizen. So your people in production, your people in operations, different parts of the business, do they have a mentality of what new technology is coming to market? How can I, use that to simplify my work, to reduce error? How can I use that in my daily, workflow? Where are we in terms of is this across all business units, or is this primarily related to technology and product development?
It's across all units. We see all kinds of ideas. We see ideas like you said they're working on a particular part. I'll give an example, okay? There's a guy working in the factory, and they started seeing a particular kinds of defects, and they noticed that when that defect happens, the machine starts to sound funny. So they created a technology where they embedded a microphone, and it samples the sound of the machine every minute. And based on that sound, it predicts when the machine is going to fail. So this is something they did while doing that day job. Mm. And now, you know, they are using this technology on other tools as well, right? That's one kind of example. Other kinds are, you know, people working in the field with our customers, or, you know, people in the startup, and then they find a gap, you know, like, you know, oh, if can Intel, you know, great, you have this processor, but I also want this, you know, can you do that? For example, you know, we have a depth camera called RealSense, okay? The application for this is robotics, as I mentioned earlier, you know, for navigation. But some people would say, you know, hey, if you created a reference design for this robot, it would really help me. So someone can bring up this idea, and then we say, okay, you know, maybe it makes sense. We should create a reference design for a robot, because that way we can showcase the capabilities of our technologies and can win more customers, right? And some people are like, you know, some of the ideas are very much like very deep technology, you know, like I want to create a new kind of algorithm for artificial intelligence. So we see all kinds of ideas, you know, like from everywhere, yeah. So when we incubate, we try to incubate a lot of ideas that make, you know, like technical sense, not business sense. So I think so far, to give you some numbers, you know, in the last 3 years of operation, we have seen more than 300 ideas come through this portal, and we have incubated more than 70 of them, and we have accelerated, let's say, about 15, and we are running the current batch with 6. So you can see, you know, like, you know, we start with a big pool of ideas, maybe, like, you know, we incubate, you know, quite a lot, you know, we incubate about 30% of them. So we are quite broad in, you know, in terms of incubating stuff. But when we go to accelerate, you know, it tightens, it's much tighter, you know, because not all technologies will turn into good business propositions.
Yeah. So at the incubation phase, what are we looking like in terms of commitment? What's the average budget? Is this a 3 month process, a 6 month, a 1 year process?
So, you know, usually incubation takes like a minimum of a quarter, and some of them, you know, can last entire year, some even more, year and a half, depending on how complex the technology is. But on an average, you know, 6 months, I think. And the budget, you know, you could think of, you know, maybe 10 to 20K per project.
20K USD.
US okay. dollars, yeah.
Okay. And then the guy, the employee that's leading this project through incubation, are they full-time on the project here? Are they, you know, what percentage of their time are they spending on this?
Yeah, so, you know, maybe around like 50 to 20% of their time on the project. And that's the reason, the way we support innovation is by hiring interns, hiring contingent workers to actually work on the idea. So this guy who comes up with the idea is like a founder, and we give him a team who he directs, you know. So he uses that, you know, 15, 20% of his time to actually, you know, direct the rest of the team.
And how does this look like for the other responsibilities? So does it mean that you're reducing the other responsibilities that this person has by 15 or 20%?
Yeah.
Or you're not saying that you just need to work really hard for the next 6 months to get this off the ground, like a
you know, yeah, so this is where, you know, we, it depends on the manager. A lot of managers, you know, they believe that letting their employees work on this actually, you know, helps their team. You know, one is it keeps the guy happy. Makes his team, you know, like more skillful. So a lot of managers will allow their, you know, employees to spend 15-20% of the time on this. There are some examples where a person is very passionate and might spend more than his, you know, like extra time on this. But that's a general, you know, I think unwritten rule, you know, we have. You would not see a manager say, oh no, you cannot work on it. You know, it looks bad on him. Or her, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, in China, one of the issues is always retention. You know, talented engineers in China have plenty of options. And there's also, you know, very strong hunger to learn. And so if somebody doesn't have a good learning environment, they're not going to stick with you in the long haul. So
So if, you know, exactly, if you feel that, you know, if you had to do something which you're doing because you've been told versus, you know, you also get to do things that you like, right? So that's the reason the incubator, you know, we don't try to just, you know, kill a lot of things. You know, we let them, like, you know, the acceptance rate is pretty high for people incubate, because we want to keep people engaged and we want to keep people, like, we want to retain them, right? So if they're working on something, they'll stick here. Yeah.
What's the difference when a project graduates to the accelerator in terms of, you know, workload, commitment, the team composition, focus?
Yeah. First of all, you know, they'll need more time commitment when they come to an accelerator, because in addition to, like, directing their team, they need to also attend. We call something called entrepreneur leadership program. So we have a program where we turn these innovators into entrepreneurs. So where we give them the skills, the business skills, looking at the business models, looking at their assumptions, trees. We use, you know, design thinking methodology and lean startup methodology. These two are our main, like, you know, concepts that we teach them during the period of acceleration, in addition to turning their prototypes into something that they can demo to a customer or to a senior leader in a company, right? So slightly more time commitment is needed. In return, they get more budget, they get more people. So, like, let's say from 10, 20K, they might get like 50K, 100K, even more, depending on, you know, how promising their idea or how convincing their, you know, pitch is. You know, like someone will say, you know, hey, this is what we have done so far. It's really cool, promising. If you accelerate us, if you help us find lead customer, if you help us with blah, 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 I can deliver this at the end, right? So depending on that, depending on the proposal, you know, we can, we don't have a fixed amount, like, you know, and like, let's say you go to like a Y Combinator, every company will get like 120K and you'll, you know, have to give away 7% of your company. Here it's more like, you know, because they're all our employees, you know, some projects will be happy with, you know, with 50K, 30K, some 100K, some might need more, 150K, depends, you know. So we're quite flexible in that. So like the big step from going from incubation to acceleration is more money, more people, more irresponsibility. At that point, so we do acceleration for business reasons. We do incubation for other reasons, you know, like we want to keep people engaged. We want to make them feel it's a great place to work, cool stuff. But acceleration is like, it's business, you know, because we invest more money and we want to make sure that we turn these technologies into viable business propositions, right?
Actually, that last point, I think, is very, very good to note, and that be very clear on what the reason is behind one of these programs. Is it engagement? Is it accelerating product development? I think a lot of companies, there's a relatively low success rate in corporates building out internal incubation, often because I think this strategic imperative is not clear, and it turns often into more of a marketing exercise of, we are an innovative company.
Yeah.
We have 10 companies that are in this program. The program then becomes fairly rigid, because if the purpose is primarily marketing, you just want to kind of streamline the program, and it's somewhat disconnected from the organization.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing. You need to know why we are doing what you're doing, right? And in the beginning, that's what I said. The reason we started this program is to retain and attract talent, right? And to make the company, like, you know, a great place to work. But then, you know, what we saw is there are really some cool ideas that come up, which are worth taking further. So that's why we started this business accelerator last year, you know. So when I took over this program, like last year, before I took over, we were doing up to incubation. And so people were happy, people were incubating, we were creating a lot of cool stuff, but they were not able to lend them into the business units, you know. And that's what we saw. And we were like, okay, we are, you know, this is a great opportunity to create something made in China and bring it to the corporate.
Yeah, so if the, you know, in a traditional external, you know, third-party accelerator, VC-backed, the end result is going to be, you know, ideally getting a funding round and then, you know, taking the product to market. What does this look like for the internal accelerator? I mean, what's the graduation?
Yeah. So we call it internal IPO, you know.
Yeah.
What we do is once we are able to, let's say, sell an idea to a business unit, it goes into their planning process. We call it POP, something of planning of product or something like that. So now that process, what it does, it has cycles, you know, and it has gates. And what we do is the first gate shows the business concept. The second gate is technical feasibility. The third gate is a proper plan of how you're going to make it. So from the thing that comes out of our accelerator already passes those first two gates, because we have already done market analysis. We have already done technical feasibility. All we need to do is that pass the last gate. So for business units, I think it's a great thing that, you know, someone has already done all this. All they need to do now is to pass the last gate, and then it becomes, you know, either a feature of the product or the product itself, right? And if when that product is launched in the market and it starts generating revenue, that's when we call it like a success, right? In fact, you know, just landing something in a business unit, we call it a success. But not everything we land into a business unit will eventually become a product. And that's natural, you know, because not all ideas that business units take, that's why there are gates, right? Some of them, you know, don't pass certain gates.
Is there ever the case where a project comes through the accelerator, it doesn't fit into the strategy of any business unit, but at Intel you feel like, hey, this really has legs, this is something that can turn into a business, just doesn't fit into one of our business units, let's spin it off, let's create a new company?
You know, that's on our, you know, that's on the cards. You know, we are actually actively looking to spin, you know, companies out of this program. You know, it's not easy because, you know, by definition, the people, kind of people who join Intel or any like multinational company, they are not like entrepreneurs. You know, they are like, you know, they like to see like a regular paycheck. They like to have a stable life. It's not easy. We have tried before. We didn't succeed. So what we are trying to do now, and what we found out was there are two reasons, you know. One reason is, and we think it's a huge challenge, you know, to create the spin-offs. And that's one of our goals for, you know, this year, is to help, you know, a really great idea spin out of Intel and be its own startup, you know. The two challenges there is, like I said, all this happens part-time, right? We call him a founder, but he only works 15-20% of the time. So he's not totally married to the idea, right? If you're doing something part-time, you're like, if it becomes a success, you'll be like, great. If it's not, then you're like, you know, I'll do something else. So if you are committed full-time, if that's, you know, the only thing you do, you are more likely to, you know, to make it successful. You know, that's one thing. So we are trying to get people to work full-time. The second is we want to get people out of the corporate, you know, nest. In the corporate, they are very like safe. They are like, you know, they see everyone else has like a day job. They're very stable life. We want to get them out, show them what the startup world is really like, how exciting it is, at the same time how challenging it is, show them the upside and the downside. So that's something we are working on, both, you know, to get them work full time and get them into the real startup world, working alongside other startups in a pretty awesome, cool, you know, working environment, like creative working environment. So that's what, you know, we are, that's one of my biggest, you know, goals for this year, is take the program to the next level, getting full-time, getting make them out of Intel, and hopefully spinning one or two, creating one or two spin-outs. Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah, no, I was talking with a woman that a friend's company is trying to bring on to invigorate his company in China, his startup. So, and she's coming from a corporate background, and she's very interested in stretching herself, but also somewhat tentative about taking that move. And so we were talking about what does she need to keep top of mind, and it's, you know, she was previously working with Disney and with Adidas and, you know, brands where you can't screw up, right? There's a lot of brand equity behind a company, same as with Intel. When you're in a startup environment, screw up. It doesn't matter. You don't you don't have brand equity to burn.
Yeah.
It's more about, you know, if you're going to screw up, do it as quickly as possible so you're not wasting time and resources.
Yeah.
And then just figure out what works. And once it works, you know, pour some fuel on the fire and build up something. Big mentality shift that, you know, is difficult, if especially if you're still in the corporate environment.
Yeah, that's true, you know. And there are different ways to get around this. You know, some companies who are super brand conscious, they will create a subsidiary and they will try new ideas under that brand. And if that's successful, then they'll bring it under the main brand. You know, like I know some companies who do that, big brands. We are, you know, I think the idea behind, you know, a spin-off like Cisco, right? I think what they do is they, if they see a great idea that they believe will really become huge if they bring it outside, they do that. They spin out and then they spin them back in. So that's a viable option, you know, to do something really, you know, disruptive. Because a lot of times, you know, like within a big corporate as big as like Intel, let's say, every time you try to do something new, you need to, you're basically breaking some process or some rule. And there are people paid to make sure that the processes and rules are followed. So you're always fighting to not just create or take your idea forward, you're also fighting to get those processes and rules changed from time to time. That's like one of the biggest, you know, thing that slows innovation down. And a lot of times it makes sense to bring them out, and that's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Very cool. Kapil, how can people learn more about your work, about Ideas to Reality, and who in particular are you interested in connecting with? Are we talking about you know, engineers, VCs, accelerators, you know, companies that you want to collaborate with? Are there particular types of companies that you're interested in communicating
with? Yeah, so what we are doing now, I think, you know, we are really definitely interested in, you know, working with the startups, you know, in terms of a lot of what we do are in like technology ingredients, you know, or solutions that someone else would need. We already right now we are working with a lot of corporates. Okay, we created a little group of corporates that meet regularly who are doing innovation in China. They have significant, you know, resources in China to innovate, and actually having programs like ours to share what we are doing and then see how and if we can partner. And through this a little consortium that we have gotten going, we actually have, you know, started doing joint developments on a couple of projects. But I think we also would like to see if there are any startups that for whom what we're doing would solve some pain points, right? So like the AI robot startup we talked about, that's a good example of, you know, how we are helping solve one of their pain points with analytics. And we would like to hear from more and more startups. And for this reason, you know, we are going to use WeChat as a channel. We have, you know, Intel China like official WeChat account. We just became a part of that. So we are going to release more and more information there. We, at this point, we do not have like an external facing website to go and actively, you know, work with people. But soon you'll be able to get all the information on our Intel's official Intel China WeChat account. It's like Intel-China. That's our Gongzonghao. And we'll periodically release information about this Ideas to Reality there. And in fact, we have already released like 2 or 3 articles there. So once you become our fan there, you can stay in touch and you can see, you know, how you guys can reach us. Yeah, that's in the works.
All right, very cool. So Kapil, thanks so much for your time today. Wish you all the success in spinning off your first companies.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I think if we are able to do it, it will really make our, you know, management team happy. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, nice being here and, you know, having an opportunity to share what we do. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. I think what you guys are doing is, I really like that this is, you know, goes a lot farther than the typical marketing thing, and you're really thinking about, you know, getting, you know, what the right level of engagement at different stages, and how do you address different, you know, different types of people that have different you know, expectations and needs. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. We help to accelerate digital transformation by advising business leaders on how to integrate IoT technologies into their operations and products. We appreciate your thoughts, suggestions, and of course your reviews. And if you have an interesting project, we would love to feature you on a future edition. Write me at eric.walenza@iot1.com.